So Luke 12, starting from verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." And he said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing."
Mark, thanks very much indeed for reading. Do keep that passage open, as we often say. You may find it useful also to refer to this nearby. It has a sermon outline on. Well, our subject today is very simple. Cash, dosh, money, the accumulation of it. That's what we're considering today. The parable that we've just heard read is about a man who desires cash, who desires the accumulation of great wealth. And so I think it's fair to say our subject is something that is close to the heart of this city, and perhaps a little bit closer to our own hearts sometimes than we dare to admit. At the very least, I think it's right to say that it's something that we can all relate to. Now, just before we look at this parable in detail, I've got a couple of stories which I'm calling useless wealth. Some of you may have heard before, but I've got the updated versions here. The first one is about James Howes. James Howes is currently 35 years old, real guy, lives in Wales. In 2009, just when the cryptocurrency started to hit the exchanges, he started mining. And I think what that means is you put your computer into action and you get the computer working, and you got rewarded in bitcoins by one currency creator. Now, over a very short period of time in those days, he managed to accumulate 7,500 bitcoins. By 2011, that was worth a few thousand dollars. Now, a couple of years later, he confused the laptop that he'd been mining these bitcoins on with his other laptop and sent one off to the refuse tip, because he thought it was obsolete. The one with the crypto key is currently in a landfill site in Newport in South Wales. Today, the value of those bitcoins is £225 million. You can understand James is a little bit distressed about this. He's been negotiating with the council, and his latest offer a few months ago was, "I will give you £50 million if you let me excavate the site." And the council will not budge. Useless wealth. Absolutely useless. The other is a story of French gangsters, which made me laugh a lot. French gangsters, they decided to rip off a security van. They had a tip that this particular security van was going to be carrying a lot of cash and vulnerable, and they planned the heist carefully, and everything went exactly according to plan. They got away with it. And they ended up with 2 million euros. This happened just over a year ago. Just one small detail they'd overlooked. Every single euro was an individual coin. And so they had 17 tons of euros. And the French papers, when they got hold of this, had an absolute field day taunting the gangsters. They said, "You can try and celebrate your success, but even the smallest cafe in Paris will become suspicious before you drop the 10th euro on the counter." And so they concluded the punishment is included in their success. They'll have to spend their cash very carefully, one soft drink at a time. Useless wealth. Useless wealth. Well, our Bible reading just now, Jesus tells this famous parable. I guess most of us will have heard this parable before. And it's about another person with ultimately useless wealth. So I hope those stories just sort of set up the agenda for us. And as I've said, I mean, this is a subject that I think is very close to the heart of the city, perhaps our own. Most come to this city to get as much of it as they can, and many will succeed in accumulating large amounts. And it starts very young. This is a story from the school just over the road. Some of you will know, boys' school over the road. They were asked by the headmaster. The headmaster couldn't really understand because apparently a rival boys' school in another part of town sent lots of their graduates off into politics. And they couldn't understand why this school didn't have any people going off into politics. So the headmaster sent off the sixth form, go and take this question away, ask the people in the sixth form, why is it that all you guys, as you go off into the world, you don't go into politics, you do other things? And the answer from the sixth form came back, sir, politics is all about running the country. We don't want to run it, we want to own it. Well, the first reading of our Bible passage today, and you might conclude that Jesus is against riches. You might conclude that he's against rich people, but that would be to miss the point. You see, Jesus did not come to wag his finger at the rich. Jesus wanted the people he was first speaking this parable to, he wanted us to understand how dangerous money can be, how easy it is for our wealth to actually end up useless. Well, our Bible passage deals with this in two approaches to money, two approaches to life, we might say. And I think we get the summary in verse 21, if you want to have a look down at verse 21. So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. So first, Jesus outlines the life of the rich fool, the one who lays up treasure for himself. It may sound extreme, but actually I think the shock is that it's quite normal. Like most in our world, a life of desiring and accumulating, well, it's just the normal, everyday, self-centered life. And secondly, we'll see the alternative as we carry on through this, the one who is rich toward God. In contrast to the self-centered rich fool, we have the God-centered life. And I think it's quite useful seeing those two alongside each other as we compare and contrast. But once again, the presenting issue, easy to relate to, it's cash. And you won't be surprised to hear, without sounding too corny at this point, the application goes way deeper than our pockets. We're going to look at both. Firstly, the self-centered life. You'll see the first point there on the handout, the self-centered life. And as we join Jesus, we walk straight into a family dispute. Verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Someone died. There's an inheritance. It's normal life. And the man comes bounding up to Jesus because he wants his share. There's obviously been a little bit of backhanded, underhanded work, and he wants more of what he hasn't currently got. Verse 14, Jesus said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" You see, Jesus has no desire to become a local magistrate and arbitrate over a family dispute. Instead, well, it perfectly sets up the main thing that Jesus is doing here. What he wants to do is expose the danger of this self-centered life. And so, turning to the wider crowd, he uses this as an opportunity. It's a very public opportunity to expose covetousness. You'll see the first subpoint there. And he said to them, so now speaking to everybody, "Be on your guard against all covetousness." That just means very simply wanting more of what we haven't got. That's what the man wants. And I think one of the ways that Jesus gets under the skin here is the way he just makes all of this sound so very normal. I mean, we can all relate to this. No matter where we are on the sort of pecking order of cash, we can all relate to the simple fact of wanting a bit more. It's not hard to work out. We all, in a sense, want more of what we haven't got. I mean, this is the simple level. I mean, this is a hardworking man trying to do the best for his family, perhaps taking on more debt than he can afford. Or it's the new graduate who hits the city, truly believing that she will be earning big money soon, and so she runs up large credit card debts. And whether this particular example is driven by greed or a desire to provide doesn't really matter. The point is, this sort of life, desiring a bit more of what we haven't got, well, it's just everyday life and normal for all of us all the time. And the daily pressure from the world makes coveting so normal, doesn't it? It's the sort of the water that we exist in. It is the oxygen that we breathe. I mean, think about all the advertising around us telling you about things that you haven't got, that you should want. Successful advertising creates covetousness. That is the aim, and we all fall for it. And Jesus goes on to show us why coveting is so dangerous here. I guess the biggest danger of coveting is because you might actually get what you want, as Jesus explains. To do this, he shows us somebody who becomes super rich, gets it all. And this super rich guy, we don't know his name, but he functions as a sort of hypothetical character. And of course, it exposes the true danger of coveting. So you'll see that second subpoint there, having it all. It's the danger of actually getting what we covet, having it. Verse 16. And Jesus told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. Well, is this thoughtful, diligent planning? Is this good stewardship? No, not in this case. His motives are exposed. Verse 19, I'll say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. You see, he doesn't want barns to store his goods so that he can be a good steward. He wants barns to store his goods to serve himself. And in the end, that sums up perfectly what this man, our hypothetical rich guy, what he's all about. He's all about one person, himself. That's his deepest desire, is me time. And I think there are a few details which really bring this to the surface. Have a look at verse 17 in the parable again. It's interesting. This is a parable that is being told by Jesus, but the man in the parable takes over as the narrator, a clear indicator of his increasing autonomy. The end of verse 17, whose crops? They're my crops, he says. Verse 18, my barns, my grain, my goods. The man lived to serve himself. Verse 19, he says to himself, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. I mean, there's something deeply appealing about this, isn't there? It's very easy for this to become our default setting. Hard work for a season, careful management of resources, it's drummed into us from an early age in the city. And then the five-star, first-class, room-serviced, comfort life. Early retirement desired by most, obtained by a few. Some of you will have heard me say this before, but when I first started working, I worked for 10 years in the city, my first job, I was sat down quite early on with a financial planner, and the first question I was asked in my early 20s, when do you want to retire? And it became very clear that if I said anything less than, or more than, depending how you look at it, the age of 50, I was a complete slacker in their minds. I needed to have high ambitions. It was a good time to sit back and enjoy my life. And some of you will have experienced a similar thing. But here's a shock. And I think this is where the punch of the parable really hits home. Look at verse 20. God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? Well, our man who has it all, our hypothetical super rich guy, he's overlooked just one important detail. his riches are ultimately worthless. A fool in the Bible has nothing to do with intellectual ability. It's rather a matter of spiritual discernment. And that becomes obvious with reference to the soul. Verse 19 alerts us to the problem. Verse 19, I will say to my soul, our rich guy says, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. But here's the problem. How can stuff like money that is material be any use to your soul, which is spiritual? C.S. Lewis of Narnia fame had many influences in his life as he was sort of formulating his ideas. And the one that C.S. Lewis would often refer to was somebody called the teacher. That was a man by the name of George MacDonald. He had a huge influence on Lewis's life. And Lewis would quote him from time to time. MacDonald said this. He said about the soul, you do not have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body. That gives the right perspective of what we're talking about now and switches around what we often sort of fool ourselves into thinking. We think that our body and our material experience is where it's at. You do not have a soul. You are a soul. The thing that makes you, you, me, is my soul. That's who I am. You don't have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body. And I'm afraid that's going to come and go. Of course, very few people in our city understand that. But in the real world, one day, God decides when our time is up. Verse 20, God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you. One commentator puts it like this, the soul which had hoped for ease is now called to attention. And there's something sort of horribly ironic about the way verse 20 ends. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? You see, in the end, no matter how big your coffin is, you can't take it with you. In the end, if our wealth has been used to serve ourselves, well, it might as well have been sunk into that landfill site in Wales. Useless. And so Jesus here spells out the alternative, not a self-centered, but a God-centered life. And there are two sub-points which I think helps us to understand the alternative that Jesus lays out here. To be on your guard and to be rich toward God. Be on your guard. Verse 15. And Jesus said to them, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. I mean, it's sort of obvious, isn't it? But to define our lives by what we accumulate, by what we own, by all the trinkets that we rack up, the idea of defining our life by those things is a very narrow, it's a sign of a very shallow existence. There are so many useful sort of things written about this stuff. Let me just quote from one commentator, because I thought this summed it up very well, very simply. Few people, he writes, think of the danger of getting rich. Most think, of course, that they will become great, just in proportion as they gather wealth. Yet there is never a more fatal error. A man is really measured by what he is, not what he has. We may find a shriveled soul in the midst of a great fortune and a noble soul in the barest poverty. A man's real life is what would be left of him if everything he has were stripped off. His real worth is his character as it appears in God's sight. And we will make a great mistake if our goal in life is simply to gather more worldly trinkets than our neighbor. It's simple, it's obvious. It makes the point very clearly, I think. The stuff we have, the material world, the very thing that the city around us tells us we need to strive for will never satisfy, and it was never meant to. You see, humanity was created for something much better than stuff. Each one of us were created for a relationship, a personal, an intimate relationship with God. And so to put our desire for God at the heart of our life, above everything else, is first and foremost what life has as its key. Jesus came to help correct the natural desires that we have and to correct them with the right desire. You see, to covet is to desire things that will replace the desire for God. To chase money and possessions is to replace the Creator with the created. And in its simplest form, I mean, to actually chase the material and to turn our back on God, well, that is what we as Christians call sin. It's an act of rebellion against God, the ultimate reversal. And Jesus says, be on your guard against this. A guard is somebody who is stationed on the edge of a camp to protect the camp, warn the camp of danger, fight if necessary. A guard needs to be ready to fight. Be on your guard. Get ready for the fight. Don't make the mistake of thinking that this enemy will be a pushover. Be ready. Ultimately, this is a spiritual battle. And instead, we get the positive as we finish. Be rich toward God. Have a look at verse 20. God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." The fool, well, we've seen, haven't we? I mean, he lays up, stores up treasure for himself. The contrast is made of a person who is rich toward God. Now, you might expect Jesus to say, well, instead of laying up treasure for yourself, you should be giving away all your treasure, emptying your pockets and giving it to the poor. Jesus doesn't say that. See, being wealthy is not wrong. That's not the big challenge here. Giving away all your cash is not primarily the challenge either. Jesus is way more nuanced than some prosperity church gathering where everyone is told to empty their pockets. Look at the phrase again. The last three words of the passage, be rich toward God. The three words, rich toward God. I think the breakthrough is I was sort of working on this, trying to really sort of see where the application bites, is when we realize what the alternative to rich toward God is. Rich toward God, the alternative, as we've already seen, is rich towards self. That means, just to remind us, I mean, that means making much of my life, arranging my life so that I have me and my comfort as my priority. That's the self-centered life. Jesus exposed that. He's uncovered that. But if I'm rich toward God, then the opposite is true. It means I make much of not myself, but God. And so I arrange my life with him as the priority. Not me, but God, ultimately, is what drives all my decision-making and anything that is entrusted to me. If I'm rich toward God, then I'll be poor toward myself. And yes, that is going to impact a lot more than the cash in our pockets. It's going to impact everything. But not because Jesus tells me to set up direct debits. Because I'll start to grasp that God is, well, ultimately the only place I can truly invest what I have with, because in the end, God is the only one that will last. And so the challenge is to use everything that he's entrusted to me. I mean, that's my time, my skills, my abilities, my career, my retirement. I'm not planning one soon. My family, my cash, everything used for him, not for me. You see, we can't take things with us, but we can send them on ahead to have them waiting for us as we give them to God, as we use them to make God our priority. I think this is a huge idea, and I know this is a familiar parable. There'll be some here who've heard this parable many, many times. I think this is the challenge. You see, we can't take our stuff with us, but we can send it on ahead as we give our stuff now to the service of God, making him the priority. And what that looks like is going to be different for every single one of us. You need to work it out. It's between you and God. A story is told of two men, good friends, both worked together, and they had a highly lucrative business. This is a true story. One became a Christian, left his job, and he went into the mission field, and he gave his life to telling people about Jesus. He decided that was the best way for him to use everything that God had entrusted to him. And these two men remained friends. The other did not end up converted, but he did climb higher and higher and became richer and richer. As they both became old, they became unwell, and they actually both went into hospital, different hospitals, at the same time. The daughter of the chap who became a missionary went to visit the other guy because they'd become family friends. So she went to see her father's old friend with days just to live. And the man on his deathbed, the non-Christian, he said this: "You may wonder why I cannot be as happy and content as your father. But just think for a moment the difference between us. He is going to his treasure. I must leave mine behind." Well, as we close, I hope that's given us a few things to think about. But just think about this final fact as we close. Jesus was telling this parable as he walked on the road to Jerusalem. He had chosen a life of serving us, serving his Father. And he was prepared to hold nothing back, to do everything necessary for the sake of those that he loved, all of us. He was going to Jerusalem to die. He was going to Jerusalem to die for people like us with our naturally twisted ambitions, our natural desires for wanting to promote ourselves and accumulate for ourselves. Well, once we get to know him, if we're lacking any sort of motivation, if we're not quite sure why we should be investing our life with God, consider Jesus as he walks to Jerusalem to die a death that we deserve. As we see that, well, then we start to see that we need to value God and not things, because ultimately, it is where all of our riches lie. You'll see at the bottom of the handout there are a few questions. You may want to take some of the ideas we've considered today a little bit further. I know there are lots of delicious snacks still to be consumed at the back. Thanks to JY and Jeremy. It looks amazing. Thank you. Well, why don't you sort of munch on one of those cinnamon buns and answer one of these questions between you, just in twos and threes afterwards. It may be useful to pick up some of those questions. Why don't I close in a prayer now, and I'll hand back to Tom. So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Our Heavenly Father, we do ask that you will help us to consider carefully what this means. We're sorry we naturally fall into ways of wanting to shore up our own position and make our own lives comfortable and fill it with things and experiences, and we overlook what actually counts. Help us, wherever we are in our understanding of you, to consider these things afresh, and to understand what it means to be rich towards you. In Jesus' name, amen.